No one is beyond redemption. And I think it's been so cool to see how so many of the things that I failed at, or how so many of those mistakes made in the first 10 years, you know, when I was running clubs, were really turned almost into gifts.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans, to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I'm sitting down with Scott Harrison, founder of Charity Water, a nonprofit dedicated to bringing clean and safe drinking water to people in developing countries. Scott Harrison is somebody that I've looked up to for a while, that I've admired in not only the way he handles himself, but the work that he's been able to do. In this episode, Scott and I talk about what it means to develop a passion for others, how to cultivate a following and kind of deploy a mass amount of people to accomplish good. And also, we talk about what it looks like to fight injustice and where you identify your value and your purpose. All right, let's do this thing. Here's my conversation with the Scott Harrison. Hey, Scott Harrison, one of the people that I've admired for a long time is on Hope Still Wins. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, man, it's good to be here.
We have a couple things in common. One of the things that I want to talk to you about right away is we're both only children.
Yes, it is pretty rare. My wife is an only child as well. I'm not sure if you knew that.
How has that dynamic worked out?
We decided to have two.
I did not know that, but the being an only child is, you know, I don't know how much of a role it's kind of played in how I see the world. But there's, as I get older, I don't know if you feel this way, I see more and more on like the path that I chose to go after. Like, I think it comes from just being alone often, having a lot of time to think and a lot of desire to connect with people because I didn't get to do it inside my own household.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of responsibility too. Mm. There wasn't anybody to share doing the dishes or, you know, in my case, I had a sick mom. So I was kind of a caregiver, but you couldn't tap somebody else in to take out the trash or, right. It wasn't, hey, that's your day. And then that's their day. It was all your day.
Scott, one of the reasons I want to bring you on Hope Still Wins is one, because I believe that your story is inspiring personally. But also, I really am a believer in the advocacy that you're doing for people around the world. And so that's where I want to start here. You're the founder of Charity Water, but that wasn't always your story. And I know you shared a lot. Mm-hmm. Could you give like the high level overview of how you even got to the place of wanting to found a clean water company?
Yeah. Well, you know, we mentioned I was an only child born in a middle-class family. When I was four, my mom became disabled due to a carbon monoxide gas leak. It was a really freak accident in our home. She was the canary in the coal mine, you know, wound up passing out on New Year's Day. That led to the discovery of the leak. And she was just never the same again. So I grew up in a conservative Christian home, helping to take care of mom, sidekick to my dad. And, you know, I played piano on Sundays in church. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't have sex. I didn't swear. Good kid. Yeah, I wanted to be a doctor when I grew up to help people, sick people like my mom. And then, you know, at 18, the classic cliche of prodigal rebellion set in. And I moved to New York City to become a nightclub promoter. I figured if I'm going to rebel, I should do it in style, you know, drinking and drugging along the way. And I worked at 40 clubs over 10 years, really trying to get to the top of the New York City stratosphere. And, you know, I was chasing models, I was chasing cars and watches and, you know, the fashion shows around the world, and became, you know, quite successful really at that. You know, there were probably eight of us running all of nightlife in New York City, but hit a point at 28 years old, 40 clubs into the journey, where I just realized I was a mess. There would never be enough. I was morally bankrupt. I was spiritually bankrupt. And I had come so far from the foundation of spirituality and morality that my parents had, you know, tried to instill in me. And if I continued down this path, I would die young, probably of an overdose, and my life would mean nothing. You know, my tombstone might actually read, you know, here lies Scott Harrison, who got a million people wasted. And that'd be it. I wasn't a giver. I didn't give up my time or my money. I was just a consumer. So this led to, you know, again, this is the shortened version, kind of a 3-month discovery, asking myself the question, what would the opposite of my sycophantic, selfish, hedonistic life look like? What would, you know, I realized, I think, Ben, like a small course correction was not needed. A pivot was not needed. A find every single thing I'm doing and do the freaking opposite was needed. And to me, that looked like selling everything I owned, trying to start life over at 28, find my way back to faith, find my way back to morality, and go tithe one of the 10 years that I'd wasted to some sort of humanitarian service. You know, could I be useful? And the first 10 groups that I applied to denied me, because, you know, they didn't freaking know what to do with a nightclub promoter. You know, how would I be useful? They're serious people doing serious work. And then I was really fortunate. One group said, hey, look, you can join us as a photojournalist in Liberia, West Africa, and you have to pay us $500 a month, by the way. So this, it just felt perfect. You know, I was going to go broke serving. I was going to, at that time, literally the poorest country in the world. Liberia just completed a 14-year brutal civil war. There was no electricity. There was no running water, no sewage system, one doctor for 50,000 citizens. So that was really where I got my start in, you know, second half of life, I guess, come a little early. And I wound up volunteering for 2 years there with a group of doctors and surgeons and nurses who were providing free medical care to people who couldn't afford it and who didn't have access. And then I came across the water crisis while I was there. And I learned that, you know, half the country was drinking from swamps and ponds and rivers, and half the disease in the country was because people were drinking from swamps and ponds and rivers. And, you know, I realized the global water crisis, something that had never even occurred to me before, you know, now includes what, 771 million humans. And it's the root cause of so much sickness and so much death in the world. And maybe this is something I could contribute to solving. So I came back to New York at 30 and I started Charity Water.
And that's where it sits us today. A couple things within that story that I want to touch on, because one of the reasons Hope Still Wins, this podcast, was started was because I heard so often from so many different people out there trying to do great things that they feel isolated, they feel alone, they feel like their story is either too difficult to do anything good with it, or they don't know how to move forward on any type of purpose and mission that they, or any type of solution that they want to go after in this world. Would you consider that moment for you, that kind of awakening, when you felt like, hey, if I died tomorrow, my tombstone would say nothing? Was that a rock bottom moment for you, or was that actually like a peak mountaintop moment for you? And what kind of, like, how did you work through the clarity during that moment to know you needed to change?
It was more of a rock bottom moment. I mean, I had, you know, on this vacation, there were servants waiting on the guests, you know, picking up our towels behind us. My girlfriend at the time was on the cover of fashion magazines. I had a Rolex. I drove a BMW. And there was just this deep sense of darkness and unhappiness. And it was almost like the veil was lifted. You know, it's almost like, you know, the game of musical chairs where the music stops and there was nowhere to sit. And it just caused me to examine my life. And it was a really spiritual moment. I'd been reading A.W. Tozer's Pursuit of God you know, hungover on this trip because my dad had sent me down with a book, and it's kind of the first piece of religious anything, you know, that I'd picked up in a decade. So it was a real kind of catharsis that then led to a lot of a struggle. What do I do next? What do I do next? And, you know, I wrote a book that has a lot more of this kind of journey in it. But, you know, there was a moment in New York City where I fired a guy from stealing at a club, and he came after me with a gun. And, you know, I'd had my life threatened so many times before. But this was kind of a great moment to just get out for a couple weeks and examine my life and just realize, man, I don't ever have to go back to that. I could do something completely new. And that's where I got this idea of, you know, the tithe of service. But again, then that was just no and no and no and no and no, and doors closed until finally one opened, which kind of led me to this journey and the discovery of Dirty Water.
Yeah, Scott's not only the founder of Charity Water, he's also the author of the best-selling book Thirst, which I encourage you all to pick up and check out. You know, Scott, one of the things that comes up and one of the questions that we get sent in a lot is, okay, I've now, for you, it was, you know, the clean water crisis and identifying this is the injustice that I want to go after. A lot of people write in, they say, okay, maybe I care about the environment, the cleaning up of coral reefs or those kind of things. But they don't know how to, there's two things that go about it. They don't know how to take a step forward. And the second is they're so afraid, and this is, comes from me too, of what they'll have to give up to go after those things. Like for you, you know, you're a club promoter. You have a lot of friends in that world, your girlfriend's in that world. Now probably not all of those relationships were shallow. Some of them actually probably were really great friendships to you. And so but you're gonna have to give them up at some level and leave some things behind. How do you do that? Like, how do you get your mind to go, this is worth it?
Yeah, Ben. I mean, I think in my case, a lot of them were unhealthy relationships. I mean, okay. My life consisted of dinner at 10 p.m., the club at 12, after hours at 5, and taking Ambien to come down at noon. Yeah. So yeah. These were not, deeply intellectual, spiritual, emotionally intelligent relationships, you know, and I think what helped me quit the smoking, you know, full stop, and the drugging and the gambling and all those addictions was so radically changing my environment. I mean, I went from a bunch of people partying, a context of a community of people partying for a living and trying to get laid every night, to a group of humanitarian doctors and surgeons who were trying to live out their Christian faith by serving people with no access. So, I mean, it just couldn't be different. So it's not cool to smoke around doctors, bro. You know, it's not cool to, to stay up, you know, till 2 a.m. Like, not that there would be anything to do. Completely different intentional lifestyle, a community intent on service. And I loved it. It was so much healthier. There were healthy families. There were healthy people. These people came alive by using their time and their talent and their gifts to serve others. And I wanted to be a part of that. So, you know, I think it might've been a lot harder if I just decide one day, okay, you know, I'm going to come back to faith, you know, and I'm going to stop sleeping around and I'm going to stop doing drugs and I'm going to stop drinking and I'm going to stop smoking. But if every single person around me is continuing to do that, I don't know that I would be strong enough. I'd probably slip back in it. So for me, that change in community was really important. And I will say, I think you started to ask this earlier, and I don't think I answered it, but, you know, the mistakes of your, like, no one is beyond redemption. And I think it's been so cool to see how so many of the things that I failed at, or how so many of those mistakes made in the first 10 years, you know, when I was running clubs, were really turned almost into gifts, into learnings. That really helped me with Charity Water. I mean, for instance, I'd gotten really good at promoting to get 1,000 people to turn up at a club and care about getting past the velvet rope to then spend $25 on a cocktail inside, you know, and tell them their life had meaning. I took all those skills and then started promoting, you know, radical generosity and compassion and clean water for every single person alive. So, you know, I found that, like, God was able to redeem all of these skills. And I kind of got a clean slate. You know, I didn't really dwell a lot and beat myself up for the past life. I just started over and tried to live clean and tried to follow, you know, this new purpose with passion and conviction.
Man, it's you're hitting something personal, because for me, you know, we started Generous Coffee thank you, buddy. You know, we sell coffee. It's a for-profit company. We donate 100% of the profits. That's the agreement that we made in the operational agreement. So like nobody can take advantage of it. Trying to buck the system. And here's the thing. So we start this 4 years ago, coming off of my time on television. And I have fought still to this day with two things. One, that I feel like a fraud. And so it's interesting to kind of hear you say, hey, nobody cannot be redeemed. And then the second is, I feel like half the time when we're running this company, I feel like I'm building the plane while I fly it. Like, I feel like we're like 2 foot from crashing into the ground, and then we figure out a patch and it works for a little bit longer. As we kind of close up today, I really want to turn this conversation to be, people see Charity Water and they see the massive amounts of success in making good things happen around the world. They see you and they hear from you and they go, Scott Harrison, like, that guy is brilliant. He's creative. He's even been given accolades and awards for being brilliant and creative. But there's somebody out there listening that hears all that and they feel like, but I can't do it then. Like, just Scott Harrison's way too good for this. A lot better than me. Is that true? And if not, then what would you say to that person wanting to do good, just feeling incredibly incompetent?
I mean, listen, I was a club promoter and, you know, I've raised $600 million for clean water, you know, activating more than 1 million donors from 150 countries. Like, I had no philanthropic experience. I didn't go to school. I didn't have an MBA. You know, I barely graduated NYU with like a communications degree, like getting C minus. Yeah, like I think I was shocked when they actually mailed a diploma by how little I went. And I just learned it. I mean, I was working 80, 90 hour weeks in the beginning. You know, I was single at the time. I didn't have a wife and kids, and I was all in. I wasn't watching Netflix shows. You know, I was flying around the world trying to learn about clean water and fundraising and trying to find mentors and just trying to build this thing, you know, with sheer activity. And, you know, 9 out of 10 people that I would ask for money would say no, because there was no thing. There was no Charity Water. You know, we didn't have 1.5 million Twitter followers. Like, you know, it wasn't a thing. But then one person would say yes. And then you're like, okay, I got one. And then you go and ask the next 10. And then, you know, the momentum slowly builds and like 2 out of 10 say yes. And then 3 out of 10 say yes. And, you know, now it's probably 9 out of 10 people that I'm meeting with, you know, are engaging or joining the mission at some point, because we've got a 15-year track record and, you know, a real organization. So I just don't think, I mean, I was not qualified. The only thing I knew how to do was sell expensive cocktails. It's the only thing I'd ever done in my life. And then take pictures of the work other people were doing. So I really believe, you know, I believe you don't need to follow a traditional path to become a social entrepreneur or to make an impact in the world. And in fact, some of the greatest entrepreneurs that have started some of the biggest companies, they were high school dropouts, but they were willing to work hard. They were willing to learn. They were driven by curiosity and the ability to connect with people, which I think is really important. But I don't think I'm a big believer that many, many people can do far more than they think they have the capacity to do. You know, you mentioned Generous Coffee. It's up and down. I mean, we had so many life or death moments in the first 5-7 years. I mean, you know, there were moments where, you know, we thought, oh my gosh, we've raised our last dollar. We're going to go, you know, almost bankrupt. And then something would happen. And like, okay, let's build on that. And let's try to solve that problem. So it certainly wasn't easy. You know, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, was really try to just show people, you know, this has not been a linear, you know, everything went right for the organization. There were so many things that went wrong, and it was just like boneheaded stuff that we did as well. But we had this vision, you know, we had kind of the determination to persevere. And, you know, I'll just in case this encourages anyone, I saw the 27-year stock price of Amazon the other day. And for the first 20 years, it's a straight line. Effectively, nothing happens. And then after year 20, it starts spiking up to the right. 93% of the value was created in the last 7 years. 7% in two decades. The 7% of what Amazon was worth was created in the first 20 years of grinding. So I really think there's something to that. You know, staying, you stay the course, you stay true to your values, you've got a vision. I mean, Jeff Bezos arguably wants to take over the world and sell every single thing alive, you know, and it started with books.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drank is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee.
It's interesting to me, though, I mean, Scott, because of the world you operate in, that story alone just kind of captures it. Would you ever have done it any differently? Do you ever look back and go, I wish I would have done this with in a different direction, maybe a different cause? Maybe I would rather have worked in business in terms of like maybe in an office space. Like, do you ever regret it?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, certainly things that we did around along the way, I would go back and I would have just done certain things differently as we built Charity Water. For one, you know, we started our kind of monthly giving or membership community in year 10. Mm-hmm. Like, what an idiotic thing. I should have started day one. You know, I was with the founder of Spotify in Ethiopia once, and he's like, dude, your business model sucks. Like, January 1, you go back to zero, and then you have to re-raise all the money you raised, you know, and then grow. He's like, that's not how our business or Netflix works. I mean, we build on a group of members who we can deliver content and deliver value to. So, you know, that's probably the biggest mistake. We would have been able to help a lot more people if we had the spring back then, which is our, you know, our monthly giving community today, which is driving, you know, most of the growth of Charity Water. I'll say this, you know, I'm normally asked that question with the lens of, well, why don't you just go try and make $1 billion and go start a tech company and then give the money away? And my answer is, I don't know many people who have given $600 million away. Okay. And I'm around a lot of billionaires. I've asked a couple people for $10 million gifts and they've said yes. But I just don't know, you know, there's Buffett, there's Gates, right? There's a few people. But I think if I keep going and stay the course, you know, maybe 27 years on, literally $20 or $50 billion has flowed through my hands. Far more than I would have ever made and then tithed or made and given away. So I don't regret the passion and, you know, we live a fine life. And, you know, really I wish I had more money to give more money away, you know, not to go buy a, you know, a nice car or a big house. My main dissatisfaction with not having kind of, you know, with being in the nonprofit space is that I can't write a $1 million check to somebody else and help launch their social entrepreneurship venue because somebody did it to me, you know, many, many years ago.
Thank you for sharing that. What about generosity? What about giving? What about looking outside of yourself and seeing the issues around the world and saying, I want to be a part of helping find the solution? What within that drives you? When you say, hey, you wish you had more money so you could give more money away, I would love to, you know, I do admire your work and I do admire you as a human and I think you're a great dude. I would love to say that just comes from the goodness of your heart, but I believe there's probably something a little bit more there than just you being a good human that says, this is why I believe generosity and giving and fighting injustice is worth it.
Yeah, I think I was a slave to my own selfishness for so many years, and I really played that out to the nth degree. And I realized that even though I had the watch and the BMW and the nice vacations, and there would never be enough. Someone would always have more, that I would not find satisfaction in a car or a house or a famous girlfriend or, you know, some level of like, you know, fame or notoriety. Like, there would always be somebody with an order of magnitude more of whatever that thing that I was chasing was. And I think in shifting, you know, the total intention of my life 15 years ago, 17 years ago now, to service, to asking the question, how can I help? How can I be useful? How can I use my time and my talent and my money to serve others, to end needless suffering? There's a freedom with that. Like, you're no longer a slave to the system, to the, you know, the capitalist kind of money system, to keeping up with the Joneses. And then you're fine to drive a Kia Sorento, which is like the car that I've driven for the last 9 years. I don't look at a Porsche Cayenne with envy. Like, my Kia is great. It gets my kids around. You know, we lived on a farm last year. I like bought a beat up Dodge Ram used truck. I was not envious of a $100,000 new truck. You know, you're just kind of, you know, you just don't care about that stuff because you realize that does not bring happiness. So I never want to get back on that, you know, greed wheel. So the book, you know, I wound up getting, you know, an advance that was greater, you know, by an order of magnitude than I'd ever imagined. And my wife had decided to give away all the advance and all the proceeds from the book before that happened. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I could put my kids through college, you know, with this. And there was never a regret. And because we gave it away, it became a New York Times bestseller. And I think there's something just about that generosity. I don't regret that. I don't want the book profits back. You know, I'm so happy that it can go out and be a vehicle to inspire social entrepreneurs, to get people excited about the water, you know, ending the water crisis in our lifetime. And, you know, I don't know, like, some people look at me like, oh my gosh, why would you do that? Like, that's your story. Like, you should have kept that money. I'm like, but I don't have to. And I find the more you give, the more you want to give. It's almost like a muscle that when you work out that generosity muscle, you're looking for more ways to give and not to keep.
And it also probably helps there that you have a tremendous wife who helps support that and partners with you in that. To keep the mind clear, to keep the greed pushed down, and to know that, you know, serving, looking at the outsider, caring for those who feel alone, brings a lot of joy, also creates a lot of stories, and it's probably the healthiest way to live life.
Yeah, we worked alongside each other for 9 years. She was the second employee at Charity Water, so she certainly got it, and she traveled around the world with me and saw the need and you know, was very aligned. So that's never been a tension. She doesn't want the Porsche Cayenne either. Well, I'm sure it's a great car. Nothing against a Porsche Cayenne if anybody drives one. I did have a guy, Ben, once hear me speak, and he was about to go buy like an $85,000 BMW, and he wound up buying a Toyota Camry instead and donating the $50,000 difference. And I thought it was so cool.
I bet you have a lot of stories like that also.
We do. We do have some crazy stories. You know, and in his mind, it was five communities with clean water. And he was trying to look for a family car. So yeah. Did it need to be flashy or not? You know, the Camry was fine for him.
Oh, man. Well, I hope we run into each other again soon. Final question we ask everybody on this podcast is, Scott, with all that you're doing, with all that you've seen, with the struggles that that you've worked with and worked through, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, hope, the promise of good things to come, that is so core to Charity Water's belief system. You know, we said from day one, we are not going to peddle shame and guilt. We are going to build an aspirational, inspirational brand. You know, we really thought of it as building a brand with kind of hope and opportunity and possibility at the very center. So even the way that I talk about it, you know, I'm typically not saying, hey, help us end the water crisis, right? Negativeness, stop bad water. No, help us bring clean and safe drinking water to every single person alive. You know, who doesn't want to live into that dream, right? It's an inarguable common good. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, you know, or you're a person of faith or you're not, everybody can stand for clean water. So we try to just, and then we tell stories of it's working. People are getting clean water. This year, we're going to help another 2 million people get clean water for the first time. You know, we're filling up Staples Center or Madison Square Garden now every 3 days with the people that are getting clean water because of the generosity of the Charity Water community. So I am all about, you know, hope and possibility and opportunity and inviting people to bring the best of themselves to make that possible, to kind of move the momentum forward.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us. Great episode of Hope Still Wins. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. That's it for this week, my friends. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and let's chat next week.